The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
The jihad continues. Yay! Let's all get behind the new caliphate. I'm talking about the liberal caliphate. No, no, I can't say the liberal. The communist, antifa, postmodernist caliphate. That's what's happening. It's not liberal, and it's not even Democrat. It's really not. It's maybe some Democrats that are stupid enough to follow the path and kowtow to the people who are postmodernists and democratic socialists, but it's not the average Democrat. One of the most bizarre developments in the war for the caliphate is how members of the media have fought in this jihad. They actually beat reporters from the mainstream media if you step out of line. Now, Alex Jones says that the media has hopes of catching Alex Jones saying something. Twitter has now said, well, we put him on, you know, he's on watch. We're hoping that he's going to change. We're hoping that he's going to change. Alex Jones is not going to change. That's Alex Jones. What is this, a re-education camp? You better not say anything that's harem. Well, that's forbidden in the new in the new caliphate. That's just, I want you to know the language here. It's a battlefield for speech, and it's happening on all sides. Yesterday, more fruit. The media caliphate yesterday. Alex Jones, some more on him with Twitter, but also the FCC shut down his pirate radio station. Now, I'm not a fan of pirate radio stations. I mean, I've been in this business for so long. It's a law. You want to change the law that the government doesn't own the airwaves. That's fine. But pirate radio stations, you know, don't have the legal right to be on the air as the law describes it now. So you want to change that law? Let's change that law. But it's the way it is right now. So they shut down his pirate radio station. This was his flagship station. Don't have a problem with shutting down pirate radio stations unless we change the law. Here's the problem. The FCC has known about this since 2012. Why suddenly now? And we don't seem to have an answer to that. And I cannot believe that Ajit Pai, who is, I think, one of the strongest FCC commissioners we've had, when I say strong, strongest on freedom of speech and freedom, the strongest we've had. I like this FCC. I've done this for 40 years. The FCC commissioners, I've never liked them. This guy, I think, gets it. So why is the FCC shutting him down? Again, we don't have a reason. But the jihad, I want you to know, is happening. Alex Jones, then Gavin McGinnis. I'm going to show you the jihad on the other side. And if we don't start standing up, these voices are going to disappear. There is no doubt in my mind and no doubt in the mind of my fellow broadcasters that our era is quickly coming to an end. Now, when I say our era, I have no problem with the world changing. I have no problem with technology changing. You know, I'm not married to any medium. It's the message. It's being able to be heard and to be discussed and have the battlefield of ideas. That's what's important. Radio is stronger than ever. And yet it's not. Radio is under attack. It's been under attack ever since Rush Limbaugh got on the air. However, it is so ingrained in our society now and so ingrained in advertising that, oh, talk radio is poison. That talk radio's days are numbered. Okay, well, Some of us planned for that. Some of us have been saying, okay, well, let's go into podcasting. Let's go online. Let's expand. And we have. But those platforms are under threat now as well. If we don't all come together and we don't start supporting voices left and right, we are going to have a fascistic state quicker than you think. That's where we're going to begin today. Let's look at what's happening on the left to the voices who say, wait, 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 let's have some reason. Let's look at what's happening to them as the show begins.
It's Friday, August 17th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Stu, am I overstating anything? You have been the voice of reason to me for 20 years, and you're always the one cautioning me. I think it's interesting to me that I said 6 years ago, I think broadcast has another 10 years left in it before it's decimated. And we're 6 years in, 4 years. Do you think it's 4 years at this pace on what's happening? And I'm not talking because of technological changes. I'm talking about the kinds of changes that are happening in society where we are silencing voices. Do you think we have 4 years? If this continues at this pace?
I think it's going to be...
Is it reasonable to say that?
It's a reasonable thought. I mean, I think it is reasonable to say it. I don't know where it lands.
I don't either.
But you're seeing this is happening faster than you would expect. I mean, there's always been pressure on, particularly conservative broadcasters. But you're seeing it now, even in the places where the broadcasters who abandoned traditional mediums because they were being silenced are going online to places like YouTube and Twitter and Facebook, and then they're being silenced there. They're being deplatformed there.
So Facebook came out this week, one of their executives, and said, if you don't play ball with us, you will be in hospice. In other words, you're going to die. And somebody called last night in the call-in program that I did in the afternoon, and they said, Glenn, why are you guys putting all your eggs in the basket for Twitter and Facebook and everything else? A, we're not putting all of our eggs in the basket. But, when I first got into this, remember The Blaze and GBTV, it was the very first time a personality had gone on the internet and just done what we did. Nobody was doing that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it
was insane to do that. Okay. Now we're behind the ball. When we started doing that, I wasn't putting all of my eggs in one basket. I was, I said at the time that the internet is the Wild West and we have no idea how it's going to settle. Well, about 3 years ago, the Wild West was tamed and they started to lay railroad tracks and picking the towns that were going to be on those railroad tracks. As I said last night, if you were a business, I don't care how popular and how big you were, if you were a business on Route 66 before the interstate, when they started building the interstate, you should have been thinking, I've got to get my location to the interstate because this is a thing of the past. You must be where the people are. And the people right now are at Facebook and YouTube and Twitter and everything else. That is where the train tracks have been laid. My concern is that there is no rule in that town. The sheriff just shoots whoever he wants. The sheriff, if the town folks stand up and go, we want his cattle. The sheriff doesn't enforce the law. He enforces mob law. That's not a good town. And not a town that, is a town that unless you listen to the sheriff, you're going to be dead. Unless you play by Facebook's rules, you will find yourself in hospice. So what do you do? It's easy to say, well, build something else. Oh, really? All we have to do is just build something bigger than Google. All we have to do is just build something bigger than Facebook. Now, I believe Facebook can be done better. Not by me. I don't know. And it's going to take a crap load of money to do it. I don't see anybody doing it. One of the reasons we begged people 6-7 years ago, get involved. Conservatives don't risk money. They don't do what the left does. Just pile it in. Just pile the money in and somebody will come up with something. They believe in something. They just pile the money in. Conservatives say, I want results. Now, I happen to believe in that. I want results. Don't just take my money.
Smart business.
Smart business.
Yeah, okay? The left a lot of times looks at these things as donations almost.
Correct.
Their investments are, I mean, even people like as high as Elon Musk, right? Like he's taking risks and he's looking to make money, clearly.
Yeah.
But he's taking massive risks almost on an ideological basis.
Correct.
In some instances.
That's why he's going to Mars. That's why he's doing these things. He believes in global warming. He believes ASI is going to kill us all. He's doing this ideologically. He, you know, let's build the battery. Now, he happens to be in line where the market is. But if you want to invest in Elon Musk, if you were somebody who went, I think that he's the brilliant businessman. No, he is a genius, but he's going to fail over and over again, just like Edison. I mean, that's what happens when you're in that kind of territory. It's the Wild West. You don't know what's going to happen.
No. I mean, when we launched this thing, the Blaze, which I was talking to somebody about this yesterday. When we launched this thing, Netflix was a company that basically sent DVDs around the country in the mail.
Yes. That's what it was.
They had just launched their streaming company, you know, branch, but it was not really like the
focus. No, because everybody was buffering.
Yeah, you couldn't get anything.
You couldn't watch a movie.
You couldn't watch it on your phone.
Mm-mm.
You couldn't really, you had no smart TVs at all.
Right.
So you had to go buy a Roku or something and hook it up, and no one knew what a Roku was at the time. And then when you'd hook it up, even then, no fault of Roku, it was the beginning of the technology, but like it would buffer all the time.
Yeah.
People were complaining about it all the time to watch it. I mean, it was a really difficult environment. And think of Netflix as a company now that is dominating with all their original programming, mm-hmm. and all the streaming, all the billions of dollars going
they
into that.
They had the investment.
They were basically sending red envelopes around the country,
yes,
at the time
when we started. So I'm just asking, I'm going to be reaching out to people individually, talent. But we better all come together. We better all come together. And I'm not talking about businesses or anything else. I'm just saying we all better stand together. And I'm asking you as a listener, we all have to stand together. Support the people whose voices you trust, because the voices are going away. I mean, I don't want to give you a hard sell on support here. If you believe in Mark Levin, go subscribe to CRTV. Okay? You believe in Ben Shapiro, go subscribe to Daily Wire and Ben Shapiro. Those voices are important. You believe in Steven Crowder, do more than just watch him on YouTube. Support the company, CRTV. If you happen to believe in us, please subscribe to The Blaze. This is not a marketing campaign for me. I hate to even mention us. I'm telling you, we're all coming under attack. And I don't know how much longer it will last. I think, that's a long-standing prediction, I think we've got about 4 years, but it is speeding up. I want to give you a story for Queer Eye. Now, here's a show that I think is good. It's not my favorite show. I don't watch all the episodes. I've watched a few episodes, but I appreciate what they're doing. Now, my daughter came over, my older daughter. She came over and she said, "Dad, they're doing something great. They're trying to bring Red State America and Blue State America together." And I think that is the intent of the people involved, But as soon as I saw the first episode and then I saw filmed in the great state of Georgia, I said, honey, they're filming it in Georgia because of the tax breaks. That's why they're not filming it in New York. So it might be the intent of everybody on the show to bring red state and blue state together, but that's not why they're filming it in Georgia. No, the producers are like, we got great tax breaks. Let's get out of the city. With that being said, they've really opened people's minds and eyes, I think, in both directions. What happened yesterday is stunning. And it shows that those people who try to be reasonable on the left are being eaten by the left. We're going to go there next. So 2 days ago, I'm sitting backstage and there's a bunch of people with us and I'm sitting backstage with at Ben Shapiro Live and I'm talking to these people that wanted to meet Ben and they said, so I've always wondered, do you guys really believe in the products that you're selling? And I'm like, yes. And it struck me as such a strange thing, but I think there are a lot of people that just schlep whatever they have to schlep. And I said, what do you question? Well, do you really, my wife was there, do you really sleep on a Casper mattress? My wife went, yes. It seems strange to me that people wouldn't believe, but I guess that's the way marketing is. We don't talk about things that we don't believe in, that we don't use. And if I don't use the product, I tell you that. It's something I don't use, but it's, you know, I've done my research on it. Casper mattress, I did my research because I ordered one and I had it delivered to my house and I slept on it for 100 nights. And when I did, I even told you the first few nights, I don't think I like this mattress. That didn't make Casper really happy, but I was just saying, for me, I don't really like this mattress. Well, I slept on it. I slept on it in a week's time. I really started to like it. In a couple of weeks' time, I really saw the difference. Your body, you need 100 nights to sleep on the mattress to see if, is this giving you the best sleep over a long period of time? Are you waking up feeling refreshed? Are you waking up feeling good? For me, it was a Casper mattress, and I urge you to try it because there's nothing you lose. You order one, they ship it to you, you try it for 100 nights. If you don't like it, they refund everything. They come and pick up the mattress. Casper.com. Use Casper.com promo code Beck. Get $50 off the purchase of your mattress if you use the promo code Beck. That's Casper.com. So, Queer Eye. It used to be called Queer Eye for the straight guy. It's now just Queer Eye. Jonathan Van Ness. He is not a Republican. He is probably the most flamboyant of all of the Queer Eye guys. I have never gotten the impression that he was a conservative by any stretch of the imagination. Well, he dared to tell fans on Twitter with Tuesday night's Democratic primary results. He said, people need to be tolerant of other points of view. And not immediately assume everyone who disagrees with you is evil. He said, quote, luckily, a lot of extreme right people won yesterday, meaning that if we can come up with a center left candidate, we can take back the House and the Senate, not to mention many state legislatures. It's so important for the left not to go too left or we're done for. Well, this is the voice of the Democrats in the middle of the country. Okay, this is not an extremist view. Hey, let's not throw in with communists, radicals, people who want to destroy the system, people who want to get off the Constitution, postmodernists. Let's not go with them. Antifa, not a good partner. Let's just kind of try to come back and say, hey, we love America. We don't hate it. We like the Constitution, but maybe we want health care. Maybe we want more programs here and here, but we don't want socialism and communism. Well, that was not good. And then he followed it with, look, not all Republicans are racists. Just like all Democrats are not evil. We have to stop demonizing each other. Unless you're actually racist, then you suck. He went so far to say Trump is a racist, but not all of his voters are racist. We have to remember we're in this together. Oh my gosh. The left set him on fire. More in a minute. Okay, so Jonathan Van Ness from Queer Eye, a guy who I'm sure wouldn't even want to be in the same room with me. I shouldn't say that. I don't know. But I'm sure he has strong opinions about me if he knows who I am. So he's there's no skin off my nose for you know, him getting pummeled. I just think it's wrong. And I think he's actually sincere. So Jonathan Van Ness, he says, you know, not all Republicans are racist, just like all Democrats are not evil. We have to stop demonizing each other. Well, that set the left on fire. One response. Oh, yes. Mutual understanding with racists. He says, if you're upset at my tweet, being able to compromise is what's missing from both sides of the American political situation. And the sooner we all get to a place of mutual understanding, the sooner we'll get out of this mess. Who disagrees with that? Now, I'm not saying that you compromise your principles. And some people's principles are capitalism is evil. The Constitution is a system of oppression, but I'm not one of them. And I don't think 80%, I believe 80% of this nation believes that capitalism, can it be dirty from time to time? Is it in politics? Yeah. Yeah. Can it be heartless? Yeah. Can we be better? Absolutely. This is the best system in the world. It's the worst system, but the best one that's currently working or has ever been thought of. It's a horrible system, but it's the best man has done yet. Now, can we try something new? Yes. New? Yes. The ones that have old ideas that have shown us lead to oppression and death camps? No. And don't tell me that your democratic socialism doesn't lead to a death camp when you say 50% of the nation is racist. When you say if you voted for Donald Trump, you're a racist. What Jonathan Van Ness is saying is, no, that's not true. There are people that are good who are Democrats and voted, or Republicans and voted for Trump. Let's remember 20% of Donald Trump's base is Democrat. So are you saying 50% of the nation? And they are. So your question is, well, if you don't end in a re-education camp or a death camp or second class citizenship, how are you going to get that 50% to stop being racist to your definition? Well, they have to fall in line. Well, they're not going to. So how are you going to do that? The only way to do it is to have either a gun and a camp or a gas chamber, or come to a mutual understanding. How do you do that? Well, you have to come back again to the individual and say, all right, individuals have rights. You can believe that and still be a citizen. That's the American system. So he continues to get pummeled. Oh, yeah. Understanding with racist. This is the worst political advice ever. Progressive candidates that actually stand for something are how we win. Running towards the center with Clinton just gave us 4 years of Trump. Let's not be silly again. People want universal health care, period. OK, well, that's not true. OK, there are some that want universal health care. There are others who do not want it. If you want it in your area, you should be able to form that like Massachusetts did. And I got to tell you, if it works someplace in a petri dish, if you've cured it, let's go. You can easily talk me into it. If the system is better, more comprehensive, doesn't stop, you know, new studies and new ideas, and it's affordable, I am in. It just hasn't been done before. So why wreck what bad system we have, which happens to be the best in the world? Why wreck it with something we know everywhere else doesn't work? Now, is that unreasonable? So you say, well, people want universal health care, period. No, you do. You do. Don't confuse you with 350 million. You are one of 350 million. You may be one of 175 million. You may be one of 200 million. But wait a minute. Doesn't America stand up for diversity? Doesn't America stand up for the little guy? If you're one of 300 million, what about the 50 million that say no? Do they have a right to exist? The problem is, there are people who have honest disagreements, but those people aren't being listened to anymore. We're only being pushed by the extremists, the Nazis. We're being told false choice. If you're on the left, you're going for the Nazis. If you're on the left, you're going for Antifa. If you're on the right, you're clearly going for the Nazis. No, 80%, 90% of Americans don't want to be with any of those people. I don't. Do you? It's a false choice. But what's happening? The left has decided, the Democrats have decided to throw their movement in with them because those guys are effective. And so they think they can get elected. Well, they're going to get eaten soon, as evidenced by what's going on. And all you have to do is just say crazy stuff and you can get away with it. So we have Queer Eye. Now, here's somebody who is far left and is not going to be pilloried. Detroit Republican Betty Cook Scott. She's running against an Asian. She actually said, don't vote for the Ching Chong. Now, that's racist. That's clearly racist. It's not like, oh, he doesn't like dogs. He's calling all African American. No, he called two. He also called me a dog. And it's not that he has a problem with dogs. Can we look at Ching Chong? No. No. No, we won't. We won't look at Ching Chong.
How is that not a... I mean, it's amazing.
How's that not out of the park?
How Multiple is Keith, witnesses, by the way.
How is Keith Ellison not out of the park shut down?
Well, Keith, you have to... I think the left has locked us into this. And what we all need to understand is that you always believe the man. In a situation where a woman is accusing a man of physical abuse, the first thing you do is, especially if the man's powerful, you just make sure that you just lock in what the man is saying about it and ignore what the woman is saying about it. Certainly, you don't just believe the woman. There's an important point of process here. And maybe if you go through the long process and you find out that he definitely did these things, then there's a moment where you say, you know what? Maybe some Democrats shouldn't campaign with him anymore. I think that's about the extent of the punishment. We've all agreed that that's the right way of doing this. And I think we should continue on that path.
Do you remember what they said about me for just having Bill O'Reilly on?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
That's true.
How about, let me say this. If the story came out that my wife accused me, that we had broken up, and my wife accused me of walking into a room and saying, hey, take the trash out. That, I think, would be enough.
Mm-hmm.
Take the trash out. But he went further. Take the trash out. What the hell's wrong with you? Now grabbing her and yanking her off the bed onto the floor while saying, listen, B, get out of my house. Do you think I'd be on the air today?
No.
Not a chance. Not a chance. Not even a chance to respond. They wouldn't even listen to me. They would have my wife on. She would be saying these things and they would not interview me. Guaranteed. Keith Ellison, he gets a pass.
Yeah. And, you know, I made up that ridiculous scenario of how these things get handled. This is Robbie Mook. He was the Clinton campaign manager. And the question is, what do you do about these allegations against Keith Ellison? Listen. Democrats,
but right now, anything, in this moment, should Democrats be campaigning with him? What, like Amy Klobuchar, what should she be doing?
Well, to your point, I think it's still very early. I mean, I think we need to let the process play out to look if this is true.
And if it's true,
you know, I think he needs to be held accountable. I don't think people should be campaigning with him.
Oh, so the guy who was running the campaign of the person who went out in front of everybody and said the woman must be believed, that person is telling us now the new standard is, because it's a Democrat involved, the new standard is that the woman should not be believed. In fact, what we should do is launch a process. And if that process, once the process is over, we find out that that person definitely did it, then some people in his own party shouldn't campaign with him. He shouldn't not run. So, he shouldn't be thrown out of office.
Right.
But some people in his party should not campaign with him.
So I'm all with you on all of it up until the conclusion.
Yeah.
You know, what? Yes, I've been for a process the whole time. Hey, let's not destroy people until we know all the facts. Let the process work. No. It's been Salem witch trials. It's been McCarthy. You know, are you now or have you ever known anybody who is a conservative? Are you now or have you ever beat your wife? That's what this has been from the very get-go. Mm-hmm. How long have you been abusing women? And you're out. You're out. So I'm with you on the first part. Yes, there should be a process. Every American, left and right, should be for a process. Now, if he's found guilty, he's running for attorney general. If he's found to be abusive, Democrats, you want to talk about an oppressive state. You want to give the keys to the attorney general's office to a guy who is abusive to women?
Better than a Republican, Glenn.
Unbelievable. I don't say these things to get you outraged. I really don't. I'm trying to make the point that we all better step back from the precipice. Please. We're going over a cliff. I'm not going with you. If you want to go, that's fine, but I'm not going with you. We're going over a cliff. Stop, and reach out and support the people who are getting pummeled with things that you know are wrong. You just know are wrong. If they're happening to you, you wouldn't be for it.
This is why I just think we just need to get the process clear. I think we should start off with asking Keith Ellison how he feels. Does he feel as if he did something wrong? If he says no, I think we're done. But if he says yes...
Then we say, what happened to you in your childhood, or how were you oppressed and by whom?
I like that. And if he's got something there, I think he's fine. But if he doesn't have anything there, I think we then... Maybe we have a bobbing for apples contest, and we put one gold apple in there.
Well, this is starting to get a little complex.
Only
let me just...
if the accuser pulls the gold apple up while blindfolded and bobbing for apples, then we'll give her a chance to list her accusations on a piece of paper that we'll throw as a paper airplane off of the top of a building. And if it happens to land in someone's hair that is walking to the courthouse, then we'll alert some authorities. It's like
I can really short circuit this. I mean, this is way too complex, Stu. I think what we just need to do is find out, are you a Democratic Socialist? If you are, you're fine. If you're not, you're not.
Oh, okay. That sounds better. You're right. That was quicker.
All right. Our hearts go out to the people in California, this wildfire. We're doing a special on the wildfires and, you know, how they're getting worse. No, they're not. How this is caused by global warming. No, it's not. We're going to do a special on this on Monday, but let me just break this down on how this affects you out of California. Right now, the smoke and the dust from California fires now reaching the Midwest and beyond. This, compiled with the dust and the pollen that is already in the air, terrible air quality, and sometimes you don't realize what you're breathing in. You might want to grab a stepladder and check your air filter, especially if you've been neglecting them, and especially if you've been running them at full bore this summer. Go to filterby.com. This is what we do. This is how I replace my filters. Filterby.com. Order a fresh set of filters for your home or central air system for your home or for your office. I will tell you, the reason why I use them is because they just send them to me. You know, I mean, I buy them, but they send them to me. I'm on a schedule. You can be on a schedule, too. In fact, they discount it, I think, 5% if you just get on the schedule. I don't want to think about it. You know, when they come, then I'm like, okay, I gotta go change the air filter, and then I'm done. That is, I think, that's a way to make your life a little easier and take the pressure off of your HVAC system and breathe cleaner air. Save time, save money, breathe better with filterby.com. That's filterby.com. Filterby.com. So glad that you have joined us this week. thank you for listening. Bill O'Reilly is coming up in a little while. Also, I want to remind you that my new book is coming out. It's called Addicted to Outrage. I would ask that you would pre-order now on Amazon or, you know, Barnes & Noble, however you buy your books. This is, I think, the best book that I've written since Common Sense. I wish I would have had another year with it. But I've worked harder on this than I think. Gosh, I think anything since Common Sense. Rewrote the book, probably 40% of it, because I wasn't happy with it. And I really, going back and doing a rewrite, everybody was like, Glenn, it's good. It's good. And I'm like, no, it can be better. I really am proud of this book, and it is the outrage. It's funny, parts of it. Very pointed in parts. It has strong principles in it. It also clearly, there are three chapters in there and it's in three parts. The second part is, about why this needs to change, what we're really facing that nobody will pay attention to. And there's at least three chapters in that section that are just, peel the skin off your face. Holy cow. What? I didn't know this was happening. And then a solution, what we can do, what we must do.
We should talk about your decision to print it all in Hungarian only. That was an interesting, well, I didn't understand that necessarily. Yeah. Was there a,
well, I thought I'd do that because the Hungarians were the ones that would accept the pictures of me shirtless.
Oh, yeah. They actually demanded them.
Yeah. So
the only country in the world.
So a lot of people say it's because they're drunk. And this is a book really about our addiction to outrage. Addicted to Outrage. Pick it up now.
Beck. Mercury.
Imagine living in a world where there is no Google. How would we survive?
That's what's been happening in China for the past 8 years. People in China don't even know what Google is. Why? Well, Google is subversive. Google, you could get on Google and you could read anything. You could have thoughts on your own. We can't have that. Google used to be available in China. But then the Chinese government imposed strict censoring controls on Google. And so they said, you know what? We don't want to be in business with you. But wait a minute, Google. That's a huge market. You can't just shut them out. You got to do something. That was so 2010. Now Google has decided, apparently, you know, a little bit of communist censorship never really hurt anybody except 100 million people or more. So Google is developing a search engine for use in China only that filters searches and websites that are on the blacklist. Oh, man. Maybe someday they can bring that here.
Oh, they're doing some of that already?
Google has already demonstrated the service for the Chinese government, and they love it. No word yet on what this diet version of the truth will be named. I'm not sure. Google Red, Google Commie, Google Sells Out. I'm not really sure. Since President Xi came to power, he has doubled down on internet censorship. He is building re-education camps large enough to fit hundreds of thousands. You could Google that today. I don't know if you'll be able to Google that soon, but you could Google that today and see for yourself. Chinese government has shut down over 3,000 websites so far this year. But when the world's largest internet user base is there for the taking, I mean, how's Google going to let that go? I mean, China's the future. A repressive, brutal, communist future, but sure, it is the future. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram banned in China. So imagine the leg up on the competition if Google could get by just by serving up, you know, a quieter version of their service that just leaves out the important parts of life. Some Google employees declined to work on the project. Thank you. Thank you, Google employees. You are heroes. that will not work on this. Now, this is codenamed Dragonfly. They wouldn't transfer to a different project. Some of them did. Most of them didn't. A lot of them just quit. Employees also pointed out Google's inconsistency since it recently established the guidelines of using artificial intelligence, saying that the technology should not be used to contravene human rights. Oh, how quickly we forget, Grasshopper. Now, despite its reputation as a progressive utopia, 1,000 Google employees have now signed a letter protesting Google's special censored site for China. The letter says, "We don't have the information required to make ethically informed decisions about our work, our projects, and our employment." The employees are demanding transparency. You would think that Google would be there for that, right? Because, I mean, you could Google anything except, what the hell are we doing at Google? Since 2000, the unofficial motto in the code of conduct that Google distributes to its employees was just the simple phrase, "Don't be evil." Now, earlier this year, they decided, well, let's change that. Don't be evil. And they replaced it with, "Do the right thing." I guess that depends on who's telling you what the right thing is. Or if you're basing your right thing on basic human rights or shareholder value.
It's Friday, August 17th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program from BillO'Reilly.com. Bill O'Reilly. Hello, Bill.
Yay.
How are you?
Wow, he seemed excited.
I figured I just won. American would say that. Would be
Yay. Bill O'Reilly. Bill, what do you think of that last monologue with Google?
Well, the main fallacy, word of the day, of Google is that it allows false information to be put on its service. So, you know, everybody, well, this is a beacon of freedom, and it's you know, access to all information, and yeah, okay. But say I decide to write a smear piece about stew, okay?
Impossible.
That would be fine on Google.
I throw it on out there in Newsweek, which is currently out of business, but right. they have an internet presence, and they hate anyone who's not ultra-liberal,
okay.
Print it. Okay? Mm-hmm. Well, Google will throw it right into the system. It won't check anything, won't do anything. So it'll be there. And so if you look up stew and you put STU in there, bang, this article comes up. So Google, from its inception, has been a flawed and, in some cases, dangerous vehicle because it allows unfiltered stuff to go in and people believe it. So when
you know, wait, go ahead. Would you say the Library of Congress is dangerous?
Nobody goes to the Library of Congress. Nobody bothers with it.
Keep a record of every single book. They have the Satanic Bible in the Library of Congress.
Come on. Let's get into the real world here.
I am in the real world. I don't believe that information is dangerous. It is
even false information. Even false.
You should read my new book called "Addicted to Outrage," where I quote the founders on that.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to it. You didn't send it to me. I sent you my new book, "Killing the SS," with a nice inscription.
And I read it. Well, I didn't get the one with the inscription, but I did read it, and it's very, very good.
You send me yours. I will,
because it has a lot to say about the press.
You're going to sit there and tell millions of people listening to you that there's no danger in having an organization just put stuff up.
Nope.
That has not been vetted at all.
Well, nope. So are you looking at Google as almost like a media organization itself? Because it strikes me in your example that Newsweek is the one with a responsibility
Newsweek has no responsibility. The press is corrupt.
But that's their fault.
Yeah,
kids use Google. This is what I'm worried about, really. Children, and you know, you're a child until you're 18. under the legal definition of law. Children.
26.
Okay. Use Google as a Bible.
I know.
And they don't
know
the difference between a smear and factual.
Well, I would say the same thing about Wikipedia. Wikipedia has a lot of stuff up on there about me, I'm sure about you, that's just not true, out of context. But wait a minute. That's for us as citizens to educate ourselves and say, what you find, the Wikipedia is not the Bible. Honestly, Bill, it's like going and reading one book in a library and say, this is it. No, there's a whole library there. This book doesn't have the truth in it. This doesn't necessarily have the truth. It may have a slice of the truth.
How often is that stated to the urchins and the people of America?
And whose fault is that?
It's the fault of the media in the sense that they're not searching for the truth. They don't care. But when you go to China, look, China is, if you've been there and I have, China is a country that is about as oppressive as it gets. All right. And everyone should know that. Yeah, we have to do business with the Chinese because we ran up such a debt that they buy our U.S. treasuries and they're funding America. Okay. But as a society, it's absolutely repressive and it's absolutely brutal. But China has basically figured out that Google, all right, is not going to tell the truth about anything. And so they don't want the truth, China. I mean, it's certainly not looking for it, certainly don't want it. But I'm not that outraged about, you know, China and its censorship when I see the decline of truth in America.
Bill O'Reilly were king, okay, it's not the way our government works, but if you were king, would you tell Google which websites to censor?
No, what I would do if I were king, well, first of all, you'd be banished.
Well, I know that. We wouldn't be having this conversation.
Right.
Yeah, I'd be on a pike someplace.
You'd be out in Tonga someplace.
Yes, I got it.
What I would do if I were king would be say that defamation is a crime. I would make it a criminal act. And therefore, the self-censorship would kick in because these slime merchants and gutter snipes wouldn't want to go to my dungeon.
I cannot wait to have you debate, not me, the founders in the book, Addicted to Outrage. They had this very debate when they came up with the Sedition Act. The guys who were standing for free speech loved it until they were running the government. And then they hated that.
Well, wait a minute. You're putting me on the side of not wanting to know information, but I do. And that's the only good thing.
No. The founders were very, very clear on the press being able to say really anything, even if they knowingly made it up. They should have the right to print it.
But the founders had no idea.
Oh, my gosh. Well, they didn't know about machine guns either.
Right. But they had no idea that now the world, the country can be manipulated by a click.
Yes, they do. They do that because
Great Britain was doing it.
They were trying to shut down the press back then with Great Britain.
And they were basically a click and they changed the world.
Right. Yeah. All right. Back with Bill O'Reilly here in just a second. Yeah. The news of the week when we return with Bill O'Reilly. This is the kind of debate that Americans should be having right now. We should not be doing left and right. We should be talking about the meaning of our rights.
Quick question. Is it possible with Amazon on the internet to go on and buy both Addicted to Outrage and Killing the SS at the same time? And like you put it in the same cart and they would ship it to the same location?
Well,
is that something that's possible?
If you pre-order his book, it will say books that people buy together an awful lot. Mm-hmm. And it will show mine, I think.
Oh, okay.
And so if you go to mine, it'll probably show Bill O'Reilly's too. You should go buy both. His book is fantastic, Killing the SS. It's really, really worth it. Go get it. And my book is, well, worth more. It is. You'll at least get the truth, you know, about what's really happening today. Oh, SS. Yeah, well, this is what's happening today. And it's Addicted to Outrage. Buy them both together now. All right. Mercury Real Estate is our sponsor this half hour. This is realestateagentsitrust.com. I got a letter in, said, Glenn, we use not one but two of your agents, and I have to tell you, they lived up to the expectation. First, we found Skip through Real Estate Agents I Trust. He helped us find and buy a new house in Mobile, Alabama. He got to know us quite well over the phone, through our emails. Then he set aside an entire weekend in Mobile when my husband and I went to visit houses. We ended up buying a house that we didn't even see online. We were only able to see it that one time because we had to go back to Kansas. Long distance. Skip knew how everything worked, all of the contracts. We had no problems. Nothing slipped by him. He was absolutely incredible and made it all stress-free. The most competent realtor I have ever met. I wonder if he had a magic wand. In the past, we had bad experiences one after another with realtors. Not only did he find our Southern Dream house with four bedrooms for our big family, but he did it with ease and finesse. My parents will also be moving to Mobile and plan on buying a house through him. When we listed our rental house for sale in Wichita, Kansas, we met Kirk through Real Estate Agents I Trust. Having a nightmare experience with another agent, not from your site, I literally have never been more stressed out. We found Kirk. He immediately relisted our house. In less than a month, he had found a buyer. Kirk sold the house at list price, no less. I'd highly recommend people going to realestateagentsitrust.com. You want to sell your house? By the way, that's from Kelsey. Kelsey, thank you, and thank you for the trust. And I'm glad we didn't disappoint. Realestateagentsitrust.com. They're going to find the right realtor for you, and they're going to sell your house on time and for the most amount of money. They'll also help you buy a house. Buying, selling, doesn't matter. Realestateagentsitrust.com. That's realestateagentsitrust.com. With Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. Bill, I want to talk to you a little bit about the Colorado Baker. The Colorado Baker has gone from prosecution to persecution. What this guy has gone through for the last few years is obscene. I think Anthony Kennedy gave a wink and a nod to Colorado and said, no, shh, just don't say these things and you'll be okay. And now they're coming after him for another cake. Your thoughts on this?
I don't like these stories because they are, as you pointed out, loaded with agenda on both sides in the sense that, look, if a guy doesn't want to bake a cake for religious reasons, I think that should be respected. So if you're a Muslim baker, all right, and a guy comes in and says, oh, I want a cake for a bachelor party with a playmate of the month on it. And the Muslim guy goes, no, I'm not going to do that because I think it's, you know, against my religion. Do you think you would have this kind of an outcry?
No, you'd have people on the left supporting the Muslim baker.
All right. So that, and I think everybody listening understands that this is basically a continuation of the press. It always comes back to the media. Taking up the cause of LGBT people,
I don't think this is the cause of LGBT people. This is the cause of people that are postmodernist and quite honestly, I think statists. This is a guy who doesn't have a problem with LGBT people. He won't make a Halloween cake. Okay, so it's not some extremist that is against gay people.
No, and then
he deeply believes his religion to the point where he won't make anything for Halloween.
Right, but they keep targeting him.
Yes.
So they know that they could get a cake made by anybody else. But they keep, this is what I'm talking about, they keep targeting him.
Yes,
Because they know the media will pick it up and then make it about persecution of LGBT people. So this is what this, it always comes back to the media, always. If the media would say, you know what, I'm really not interested in this story. We know that it's a frame. We know that they're picking this guy out because they want to make a larger point. So we're not going to cover it. We'll stop, you know, because everybody knows that the guy is very, very orthodox in his view and doesn't want to make a bunch of cakes based on religious principle. So leave him alone, right?
I think so. I mean, but I agree with the Bill of Rights. I'm an absolutist on the Bill of Rights. So, I mean, I don't understand how this is even an issue with any thinking human being that doesn't want to live in a world where somebody, whoever's in charge, can decide what you have to think, do, say, create.
Yeah, but Beck, you're sounding almost like little Bo Peep here, because the Bill of Rights gives Americans a framework in which they can live.
No, it does not.
No, wait a minute. I won't let you get away with that.
No,
hear me out.
The Bill of Rights gives the government a framework in which it can live within.
All right, fine. But the people make up the government. So you basically have this structure, which has been fantastic, and somebody tell Andrew Cuomo.
Please.
All right. But it's now not that way anymore. What's happened is there are certain Americans that have more rights than others.
Because we've gone away from the Bill of Rights.
Well, okay, but that's not the motivation. The motivation is revenge for past mistakes.
I don't think so. I think with postmodernism, I think that's what I used to believe. I think it is now the destruction of the Western world and anything that built this system.
Well, yeah, on the real fringe it is. But again, the mass message that's sent by the news media, the comedians, and late night, you know,
yes,
the show, the mass, yes, message is sent is, look, these people have really more rights than you do because, you know, they were enslaved and you know, they were bullied and all of that. So we have to make it up to them.
Okay.
I think it's more important that we should focus on the fact that Glenn is looking more like little Bo Peep, honestly, day by day.
Yeah, probably,
that's the issue.
We're going to take a quick break before I lose total control of this broadcast. Come back with Bill's opinion on Andrew Cuomo and so
Glenn,
much more.
Back. Mercury.
Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. Bill.
Yo.
In a brain wrestling event, which Cuomo would pin the other one fastest? Would it be Andrew or Chris?
You know, I know the family very well. I knew the father because I was a local reporter in New York, Mario Cuomo, former governor. I know the mother, Matilda, very nice woman. You know, the two kids are the victim of political correctness. This is a contagion, and they have it. They caught it. I think Mario Cuomo hearing his son Andrew say that would have, you know, taken him in the back of the backyard and said, hey, look. Mario Cuomo regrets this. I said earlier on BillO'Reilly.com that I believed he was going to run against Donald Trump in 2020. This is before he said it. This almost disqualifies him now from getting the Democratic nomination for president next time around. It'll haunt him the rest of his life.
Okay, wait. Explain the role of Cynthia Nixon in that commentary.
All right. Cynthia Nixon, the actress on Sex and the City, also played Nancy Reagan in my movie Killing Reagan, is a far-left kook. No threat to Andrew Cuomo. None. She's polling about 22%, 25% in New York. Mm-hmm. Cuomo will steamroll her in the primary. Okay? But, you know, Andrew is the kind of guy that wants everybody on the left to love him, so he's moved sharply left. Because Cynthia Nixon is one of these socialists and, you know,
mm-hmm,
one of these people. So he's intemperate, another word of the day for Stu, intemperate in his public remarks and thinks he can say what he wants to say and then he can go back to the center, you know, center-ish when he wants to run against Trump. But to say that America is, quote, not really a great country. It's really not all that great. That's the quote. And you look at the Cuomo family, immigrants from Italy, and how they have risen up and achieved power and money, and you say, are you kidding me? Is this ridiculous? Do you not know about World War I, World War II? Do you not know about the Civil War? Do you not know about the collapse of the Soviet Union? Add it all up. Billions of human beings have been saved by the United States. Billions. What other country in the history of the world can say that? No other country. It is not even close. So just that fact alone makes America great. The fact that we, through our blood and treasure and sacrifice, have saved and gave freedom to billions of people. Just that. And yet Andrew Cuomo has, you know, the impertinence. Another word of the day to stand up.
Too many words. So now let me switch to his brother, Chris, who this week, I thought Andrew was trying to do a solid for his brother, and he's like, oh, my brother just said something incredibly stupid. Let me say something even more stupid to take the pressure off of Chris. Chris came out and said that the violence of Antifa, if you're standing up against a Nazi, is okay. It's morally justified.
You know, he used to work at Fox News. Was he there when you were there?
No.
Okay. So I remember Chris Cuomo walking into my office one time, and he was a correspondent at Fox. He was not a commentator. And we had a nice conversation, and he was just asking me about, you know, how to do certain things. And very bright kid, looked to be sincere to me. So, again, the victim of political correctness. So he sees this unbelievable rise of neo-Nazism in America. This is where you start.
Incredible rise, 24 people.
It's just there in the street. So after months of publicity for the neo-Nazis to show up in Charlottesville, Virginia, two dozen show up. Mm-hmm. I guess it was a convention of neo-Nazis somewhere else.
Yeah, I love the press reporting that it was under 40. At that point, you can't count to 24. I mean, you can see them right there. You can count. You don't need to estimate. You can count them.
Beck, I understand it was a cruise, a neo-Nazi cruise.
And they were all on it. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then in D.C., fewer. All right. So the movement, okay, this brown shirt movement, all right, has not materialized. Yet, that's a fact. And yet Chris Cuomo sees it as this horrendous threat, and if you oppose it, even if you're an anarchist who will attack police and set businesses on fire, that's all right because you're opposing the neo-Nazis, who are, of course, the direct threat to liberty in America. This is how crazy it is. You know, facts are out the window,
so
but they believe what they say.
Do you think that I said this when I was at Fox, that the Democrats thought they could get into bed with the uber left and, you know, we'd all play together nicely. And I said, at some point, they're going to realize, oh, you people are dead. We're going to start taking you out because we're going to have the real power. That's happening right now. Do you think that the Democrats and those who support, you know, more middle of the road, you know, blue dog Democrat kind of stuff in today's world? I don't mean like my grandfather's blue dog Democrat. But people who are just like, no, you know, I'm not really for, you know, changing the government and being a socialist nation. Do you think those people are starting to wake up at all as they're being attacked from the left?
Yes, I do. I do think that Democrats, particularly those not on the East or West Coast, those in the middle of the country, Minnesota, I think you're seeing that. I think they are getting frightened about this crazy stuff. I think the Andrew Cuomo thing is going to, you know, wake them up too and say, you know what? Our party, number one, we don't have any leadership in the Democratic Party. There are no Democratic leaders.
No. You have Keith Ellison.
Look, innocent until proven guilty on Ellison.
I know.
I want to say that.
I know.
Okay.
That's not the standard that they've held for others.
Of course not. But we are better than that.
Amen.
And the second thing is that these far left people are really dangerous. And not in the way you may think, because Americans are never going to embrace socialism. It's not going to happen. But they'll do anything, and I mean anything, to destroy people with whom they disagree. And I'm a victim of it. You are to some extent. They'll do anything. And this is dangerous. And if Chris Cuomo thinks that neo-Nazis are the problem. They're not. It's his own far-left cadre that's the problem in this country right now, that want to subvert an election, that won't stand up for any kind of truth-seeking. These are the people that are the real danger.
Let me switch topics. Go to Brennan. Tell me the story of Brennan from your point of view.
All right. Well, Brennan basically is a money maker with him. Okay, so he signs on to MSNBC. And you see this in a lot of these guys. So he's getting paid, all right? And he wants to build up a following so that he can write books, he can do lectures. There's a lot of money attached to ideology, a lot of it. So Brennan goes on, and who's the easiest target? Donald Trump. And who's MSNBC's management telling him to savage? Donald Trump. So being a good boy, he goes on and he starts, all right? Now, the problem is that he has a lot more gravitas as being former CIA director than the usual idiots they parade in over there.
Yeah.
Okay? Nobody knows who they are and whatever they say to
them. Well, let's just make sure that we don't discount that he is the guy who said the Muslim Brotherhood is largely secular. So he's still an idiot. He's just a known idiot.
All right. Well, yeah, okay. He's an idiot who had a very powerful position.
Yes.
So they use that. They exploit that. So then when he gets slapped by a person who's more powerful than he is, then he's the victim. Oh, I'm the victim. I lost my own. Well, what did you expect to happen, John? What did you expect? Do you expect that you can every night go on and cut the guy's throat? And then after he loses it, he goes, oh, I know there's Russian collusion. I know Trump did it. I know Trump colluded with the Russians. Okay, let's see the proof of that, John. Mm-hmm. You're the CIA director.
Mm-hmm.
Give me something to back it up. Nothing. So the guy's irresponsible, number one. Number two, he paints himself as a victim, as, you know, that you expect that. And number three, no one cares what John Brennan thinks. No one. I think Amorosa is a little bit more popular.
I was just going to say that. Okay, so let me ask you this.
Yeah.
One last thing. Amorosa. She's now released another worthless tape. She says she has 200 of them. Whether she does or doesn't, I don't know. But the ones she's releasing are, you know, like, you know, hey, do you like diet soda better than regular soda? I mean, it's just so stupid.
Right.
But she has proven herself now to be everything that I always thought she was, conniving. She's got, if she's to be taken at her word, which there's no reason to do, if she has 200 tapes, she started taping people during the election. She knew exactly what she was going to do the entire time.
Well, number one, I never watched The Apprentice in my life, and I have, you know, I knew who she was. She was offered to my program. I, of course, never used her because we didn't use surrogates on either side. I don't care what she says. What she says is insignificant. Anybody who would tape people at the extent that she had is not trustworthy, is a bad person. I'm sure she had the eye on a big prize at the end. She was going to use tapes to get a book. She has a book. It's all about money for her, just like Brennan. And the story is over on Monday. It's over for her on Monday.
Bill O'Reilly, when's your book come out?
October 9th. One more thing, Beck.
Mm-hmm.
I was with Kelsey Grammer last night, and stunningly.
Oh, really? I was with Jesus. How's that?
I know,
okay,
I
does mean, that make your story feel a little small? Yeah, it does.
Always when I speak to you, I feel insignificant. Always.
Okay, anyway, go ahead, name drop. You were with Kelsey Grammer last night.
Yeah. And without any prompting or anything like that, he goes, you know, I really like that Glenn Beck radio program. And I went, what? What?
No, he's a drunk. He's a drunk.
That's why he likes the program.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I like Kelsey. I've met him a couple of times. I really like him.
I dropped my hors d'oeuvre right on his side. Yeah. Look at him. Are you mad?
Oh, you were even at a place that had hors d'oeuvres.
Mm.
Wow.
I had to pay for him.
Well, okay. Bill, great talking to you. Your book comes
back
out.
We'll see you next week.
You got
bye,
it.
Stu.
Killing the SS. Pick up his book and buy him as a set. You can buy my book as well. Comes out at on September 18th, that's Addicted to Outrage and Killing the SS. You're not going to be disappointed in either of them. And it'll keep you reading this fall. All right.
Kelsey Grammer, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. He's a nice guy.
Yeah.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we could always replace Bill with Kelsey if we needed to. I mean, if Kelsey wants to come on for an hour every week, we could always slot him right in there.
I don't think he wants to.
No.
I don't think he wants to. Not a lot of people say, like, oh, an hour of Glenn Beck. Oh, that's a dream come true. All right. Especially if you work in Hollywood. July 2017. Year ago. Bitcoin down 40%. Bitcoin and cryptocurrency expert Tika Tiwari from Palm Beach Letter said, there are some things happening. They're going to bring enormous amounts of money into Bitcoin. At the time, Bitcoin was $1,850. He said, Bitcoin, I'm telling you, Bitcoin's going to hit $10,000. People thought he was absolutely nuts. We were some of them. It was in the middle of a bear market. By the end of the year, Bitcoin hit $20,000. Now, he just announced another big event is happening. He said there's several things that are coming. He says that Bitcoin could take 10x or more. It could be 40,000 or higher by Christmas. I think this is nuts. But if you listen to him and you listen to why he says that, he spells it all out. It's pretty compelling. His education course is helping you understand the world of Bitcoin and also of a blockchain, which is really important for the future. It explains what cryptos are, how they work, which ones he recommends, how to buy them. Everybody should have at least $100 in Bitcoin, but educate yourself first. Check out the exclusive Glenn Beck course now, smartcryptocourse.com. He's the teacher in this, smartcryptocourse.com. Go there now, 877-PBL-BECK, 877-PBL-BECK, or smartcryptocourse.com. Stu is really, he's bringing me up to speed on a country that you can buy citizenship in. And
yeah.
It's beautiful.
Going to be soon purchasing citizenship in the wonderful island country of Comoros. Hmm. Now, this nation lies off the coast of Madagascar. Hmm. But if the world really melts down, that's where you'll find me. Come visit. You can fly right into Prince Said Ibrahim International Airport.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
I think they've got a
Sbarro there, I'm pretty sure. Moe's Mexican.
No.
They don't. It's pretty good.
I don't think they do.
No Chipotle. You got to go into the city for that.
Right.
But
there are no cities.
You just kind of pull in and then you come over and you visit. Uh-huh. For $40,000, it can be yours as well. The cheapest city or cheapest country where you can buy your citizenship. There's a lot of actual choices. You can go to a lot of like St. Kitts. Really nice.
You know what I like is
it's a little more expensive.
The only right there in the big town right there on the water, which is beautiful. Mm-hmm. The water is.
It is.
The only building that looks like it has seen paint in the last 50 years is the Muslim, the mosque. Everything else seems to be almost look like Bosnia.
So I get what you're saying. You're saying that it's a good thing that they are accepting of all cultures. Because
it makes Haiti immediately after the earthquake look nice and stable.
But that, again, you buy low, you sell high. Okay, think of the place you could purchase.
This is where
there.
I like to call Pirate's Cove. Okay, I don't know if you know this, mm-hmm. but that's kind of where all the pirates are.
No, these pirates are in Somalia. It's another hemisphere. This is a beautiful look. You might stop. You go, hey, there's a problem. You might stop. We go after Madagascar. Mm-hmm. You might go after Africa. You're not going to stop in the middle for Comoros. This is going to be beautiful. We can all just live there together in peace and harmony.
You go there.
Okay.
I'll go to the re-education camp. I have a feeling I would even have a longer life. But good luck with that. Back in a minute.
Glenn Beck.
If America is lost, who will stand? Will it be Europe? Germany? England? Who will stand? I'm going to tell you a story of a girl named Ashwalk. She was a slave. She was sold in 2014 for $100 at an ISIS slave market in northern Iraq. Her captor would then proceed to abuse her every day for the next 10 months. Every day. One night, Ashwalk decided if she didn't do something fast, she was going to be dead. So an opportunity arose where she could grab a cell phone and call her brother. He left a cell phone out, the captor did. She took it, And she knew if she got caught using it, she'd be dead. But she knew that if she didn't do something, she'd be dead anyway. So she called her brother. She dialed her brother's number. He was in a safe location outside of ISIS territory. He said, look, here's what you do. You have to scratch your skin and fake an allergy. Then when he takes you to the doctor's going to give you medication. He's probably going to give you something like Benadryl or something. You need to chop it up and put it into your captor's food so he falls asleep. Well, that's what she did. The night of her escape, she used her brother's trick. She put 17 ISIS militants to sleep who had been abusing her for almost a year. Then on foot, she went across the Iraqi desert for 14 hours before she crossed ISIS lines and was rescued. Now, this is an amazing story, right? It gets more amazing. She was reunited with part of her family in a Kurdish refugee camp. No one knows still where her five other brothers are. One of her sisters to this day is still a slave somewhere in the remains of ISIS territory, which is 6,000 square miles. Year passes. She finally gets a break. The German government was accepting refugees, and they selected her and her family. Life was good. She's now living in the West. She's safe. Until one day in Germany, she was walking home, and a dark figure stepped in front of her and coldly said, I know you. I know where you live. I know whom you live with, and I know what you're doing. She turned and ran. This was the guy who had kept her captive. The man who had bought her for $100 at the slave market. The terrorist that had abused her every day. This was the man of her nightmares, standing directly in front of her with nothing to fear. She thought, how is this even possible? She ran to police. She reported his location to the police. His identity was confirmed after the encounter was cross-checked on CCTV cameras, so justice would be done because she's safe in the West. That's when the police and the German government informed her that there was nothing that they could do because her former captor, ISIS soldier or not, was classified as a refugee, just like she was. So she would have to learn to live with his presence. Oh, but if he comes to threaten you, you can always call this number. So she had to escape from ISIS, from Iraq. She goes to Germany. She goes to Germany to find peace and safety for her and her family from ISIS. She now had to escape Germany. This time, she ran back to Iraq. When you leave and go to the West, and the West opens its arms and says, everybody's the same and everybody's welcome. You're an ISIS soldier. You're not an ISIS soldier. You are a slave master or a slave. You're all welcome. And then puts restrictions on this that, no, I can't get involved in that because he has special status. Please hear me. We must come together. We don't sacrifice our principles. We come together on what has made us one in the first place. Why did people come here? Well, the opportunity. Well, what guaranteed the opportunity? The Bill of Rights, those things that we used to hold self-evident, those are not argued in the public square. Maybe states' rights, definitely the Second Amendment. We're starting now to argue the First Amendment. We must learn what these rights mean, why they were put in place. and we must gather around them. If you don't want to silence others, you're my friend. If you will let others speak and you don't condone violence on the streets, if you understand the basic concept that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me, if you believe in a rule of law and that there is no such thing, I'm sorry, as social justice, because that means that man has to try to sort things up, and man is always wrong. We can strive for true justice. How could we possibly take on the hardest kind of justice, social justice, the kind that comes from God? How can we possibly take that on when we haven't gotten justice right yet? We have to come together. We have to stop this. Because the rest of the world is falling apart, and they are worse than we are. If we don't do it and we fail, where will the slaves of today and the slaves, the vast quantity of new slaves of tomorrow, where will they run? Who will stand up for them?
It's Friday, August 17th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, it's our three-year anniversary on August 28th of the Nazarene Fund. 3 years. Wow. We've been doing that. This year, we're going to move to safety. Our goal is 16,000 people. We have rescued over 100 slaves on missions. We are ramping this up. I think we're at 110 slaves. I mean, we've lost two people in a mission. I know we've lost one active in the mission, another one later, but I think two in the field of operations. You don't hear about those people. And those aren't Americans, by the way, because Americans would be shot on the site. These are people from that country, from Syria or from Iraq, who are on our side and are trying to help us free Christians and Yazidis. Anybody who is kept a slave by ISIS, we're trying to save them. And we're doing it. And anytime somebody starts talking to you about, well, the slaves in America and the slaves, just ask them this one question and ask it peacefully with love in your heart. Oh, thank goodness. Thank goodness you care about this. Are you an abolitionist? What are you talking about? I'm sorry, by the way you were talking, I thought you were an abolitionist. I'm an abolitionist. I'm currently working to stop slave trade all over the world. You know that there's more slaves in slavery today than the entire 400-year Western slave trade combined? That's happening today. I agree with you. Slavery is awful. Can we talk about, I want to do something that makes a difference. Don't you want to make a difference? Well, yeah, that's why I'm saying that we should be socialist. Okay, I'm saying you and I can do something about it right now. You can argue about the socialist thing, you know, later in politics. Let's just, you and I, can we unite on this? Let's both be abolitionists.
It's an easy one.
It's so easy. Anybody who says, no, I'm not going to become an abolitionist. There's no reason to talk to those people or listen to them unless they are abolitionists today. Don't listen to them about the founding fathers. You know, they knew this is so correct. You know, well, I didn't know. Why not? It's everywhere. You just Google search.
Yeah, I will say, if you're one of the people like me who, when you heard the stat, there's more slaves today than there have been in the 400 year slave trade combined, and you didn't believe it. Because, I mean, that's how when I first heard that stat, I was like, come on, what are they doing? That can't be true.
Yep.
It actually does check out. That is an incredible thing. I mean, you just don't think that it could possibly be true.
And the people who were selling the white people, the slaves, many, if not most times, were Muslims, because they felt justified coming in, taking slaves out of the jungles who were what? They were infidels. The Quran told them you can enslave the infidel. So they didn't think they were doing anything wrong. Christianity gets a bad name, and it should for that. Some Christians should. Some Christians, it was a Christian movement. Onward, Christian soldiers. Remember? Battle Hymn of the Republic. It was a Christian movement. Not entirely, but mainly a Christian movement. There were people on the other side just like there are today. But it was mainly Muslims selling people from Africa to the white slave traders. So please, let's not talk about religion even in this, because everybody's hands are dirty here. Everybody's hands are dirty. In every country, slaves, still happening. Let's talk about that. Can we stop it now? We have to come together and find ways to do it. And I am not saying compromise your values, not saying compromise your principles. I will not bend on the Constitution. I will not bend on the Bill of Rights. And it puts me in uncomfortable places. I have to stand up for people that I don't necessarily like. But that's when it counts. That's the only time it counts.
And there's an actual thing that can be done.
Yeah.
We can all sit here and talk about what should have happened with the founders in slavery. And as a as a person who absolutely loves Ben Franklin, we're very much on record on that. But it doesn't do anything, yeah. Right? Like, we can all say it's a nice point and a good argument, but it's a long time ago. Here we go with something that we can all agree with. We can all agree that we don't want people to be slaves now. You can actually do something about it. And at the end, someone who is currently enslaved is no longer enslaved.
May I flip this around, please? Mm-hmm. Let's say you want universal single-payer health care.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's say you want that.
I don't, but okay.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Progressives do.
Yeah.
Progressives do. Progressives do. Important to remember that word as we go along here. You know what? That damn Theodore Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson... Those bastards. Why didn't they just do it? Why didn't they just do it? Well, they couldn't because, the country would have revolted and would have broken. So what? That's more important. It's a human right to have health care. Those bastards. How come Bill Clinton just didn't do it? How come Barack Obama just didn't do it? Well, because, again, the country would have broken apart. We probably would have gone into civil war and, we wouldn't have had anything left. Those bastards, it's more important. It's a civil right. Everything progressives have done that they are claiming is a human right, they've been talking about doing for over 100 years. 100 years. In the case of Theodore Roosevelt, 100 and almost 20 years. In the case of the progressive movement, 140 years. They didn't do it. Why not? Because it would have broken the country apart. Why is it when the founders said, okay, we're not going to be able to stop slavery entirely? Let's take the first step. We'll compromise, keep the country together. We'll stop the slave trade in, 1809? That was the deal that brought the Constitution together. So we had the framework to move forward. Our founders in your book, if it was about universal health care, were progressives. They were just open about it. They said, we're trying to stop slavery. Mm-hmm. You're still, except for a few now, up until 2 years ago, you were still denying that you were for single-payer universal health care. It's been the goal the whole time. So,
well, that's not the goal.
Well, no,
that's a step on the way to the goal, but they want that step for sure.
Totalitarian state. Absolute state control is the goal.
Yeah, I mean, single payer is different than what? I mean, they even said that in the... We read an article from Vox from a democratic socialist who said, hey, everyone's talking about democratic socialism now. Let me tell you what it is. I'm a real democratic socialist. She works at Jacobin magazine. And she said, look, the long term is we want to end capitalism. Mm-hmm. Again, this is not me making this up. Mm-hmm. This is her saying what she believed and what they believe. And also, when it came to healthcare, they said, we don't want single payer is not what we want. It's just a step that we think is in the right direction. What we want is something that looks more like Great Britain and in the NHS, where you'd have not, that's different than single payer. single payer keeps private insurance and private doctors. Yeah. This is every doctor works for the state.
Correct.
This is you don't need the insurance because every medical cost is paid through the state until they start rationing and nothing gets paid for anymore.
And they actually, in that same article, she said, we're not for socialism. We are against capitalism. The destruction of the capitalist society and capitalist state is on our final goal list. Well, that's not Sweden. In fact, Sweden is more free on business. Listen to this. Look it up. Sweden, when it comes to business, is more free and a more capitalist state than the United States of America is today. Wow. Mm. So they're not talking about what they have in Sweden. But can we come together on slavery? What do you say? Join us. NazareneFund.org, also OURRescue.org, rescuing our children all around the world, and the Nazarene Fund looking to take religious minorities and get them to safety, and it's been remarkable. That's NazareneFund.org. All right, sponsor this half hour, Car Shield. If you've ever taken your car in for a checkup at the mechanic and then they come back with a huge bill and you're like, oh my gosh, can you take all those new parts off and just give me my car and it won't work at all? Okay, well, that might be better because I don't have the money. I didn't plan on it. Has that ever happened to you? Because it used to happen to me a lot. Car Shield, take away all those surprises. If you have Car Shield, if your car breaks down after the warranty expires, you know what's going to happen. You're going to be dreading every time you go in, replacing your engine. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Replacing your engine could cost thousands of dollars. Even a simple repair to a sensor can cost over $1,000. Nothing simple about today's cars. Car Shield makes the process of fixing. Can you tell I finally finished the audio recording of the book last night? I'm sorry for my voice. You can have your favorite mechanic, your dealership do the work. It's your choice. Doesn't matter. They're going to get them paid, and they don't pay you. They pay directly to the mechanic, so you don't have to wait for a check. It's carshield.com. Go sign up for it now. Carshield.com or 1-800-CAR-6100. That's 1-800-CAR-6100. Carshield.com. Promo code Beck. My racism in Taos is crazy. You know, those people that, you know, killed that kid and were training other kids to, you know, shoot up schools. They can't find anybody to rent a house to them. Here they are out on, you know, on their good word and their good name. And no motels will take them in. No renters will rent to them. I'm sure they have a place available until they find out that they're Muslim or black. You know, I'm sure it has nothing to do with you're pretty spooky. So no. But anyway, that's just the way things are in New Mexico, I guess.
Sad.
Stu, do you have an update quickly on the House race, how things are shaping up?
Yeah, 538 released for the first time their forecast for the House. And they give the Democrats a very good chance of taking over, about 75% chance of taking over, which is higher than I kind of expected it to be. I did expect them to have an advantage in the House, but they are saying a 74.6% chance for Democrats to win control. And a 25% chance for Republicans to keep control. Now, you know, they famously, as everybody else did, missed the Trump win. And most people push back against those things. However, they were the most aggressive for Trump out of everybody predicting. Mm-hmm. If you're a classic baseball fan, you remember Hall of Famer Ryan Sandberg. They gave Trump the same chance of winning as Ryan Sandberg getting a hit. Now, Ryan Sandberg got a lot of hits, which is why he's in the Hall of Fame. So they gave Trump a legitimate chance to win the election, and he did. This is a slightly less chance for Republicans to hold the House going forward. Of course, this is just as at the moment thing, so that'll change over time as polls change. But the Republicans got they've got some work to do.
If the Democrats lose this election, that's earth-shattering. Earth-shattering, in my opinion. You'll have to excuse my voice. I last night finished the 35th hour of the new book. It's one thing to write 400 pages because you're not really thinking, I'm going to have to read this out loud. I would have written probably 20 pages, and I thought of that. But so I just finished it last night, and I'm a little hoarse. But I have the new Chuck Norris Sea Force water, which is like a good, you know, roundhouse kick to the throat. So
wait, I don't want to get kicked in the throat by Chuck Norris. Why would I want to drink the water though?
Well, no, it's, I mean, it'll just, my voice will be perfect after.
Oh, okay.
I have little Chuck Norris going down my throat, just kicking it away.
Okay.
It out. So anyway, welcome to Pat Gray. Hello, Pat.
Hello, Glenn. How are you?
Well, I'm okay. I was good. A little disturbed by your hello, Glenn.
Were you?
Yeah,
that I don't was know disturbing
what
that, to you.
Yeah, I don't know what that meant.
Didn't take much to disturb you.
Well, no, I live in today's progressive world.
Right.
I am offended by an awful lot of things. That shirt is driving me crazy. I think
this one.
What are you saying with that shirt?
I'm saying it doesn't matter whether we're black or white.
Right. Wow. You heard it here. What a hater. Welcome to the program. We have an update on Kellyanne Conway, a really bizarre story that she thought she was talking to somebody off the record.
But we found out because the reporter challenged her immediately on that and kept her feet to the fire on that. She finally admitted, okay, fine, we didn't agree on that. So she had no agreement with him to keep that off.
And
the
it's
record.
A really bad thing. I mean, this is really, it's ugly.
The story is from the Washington Post style section, which we should talk about here in a moment, Glenn.
But that's really important to know.
Kellyanne invited me here. This is the reporter talking, because she thought it would be a good symbol for her commitment to and the enduring strength of the Trump presidency. But as I spent time with Kellyanne and George, I saw an alternative symbol. The Conways, like the rest of the country, have been jolted by the Trump presidency. They love each other, are exasperated by each other, talk about each other behind each other's backs, and they share a roof and live in different bunkers. Goes on to talk about how her husband, George, I guess, has become, he was a Republican, but has become a big Trump opponent outwardly on Twitter. And also writing long essays about how the Mueller investigation is constitutional and things that the Trump administration obviously doesn't want out there. And it's only become popular because obviously he's married to Kellyanne Conway. So a couple of excerpts from this that are crazy. Kellyanne says, I feel there's a part of him that thinks I chose Donald Trump over him, which is ridiculous. One is work and one is my marriage. When George criticizes the president publicly, Kellyanne says, I think it's disrespectful. I think it disrespects his wife. Of course, she's talking about herself. Kellyanne is an independent woman and an independent woman stuck between two men who could blow up her day with a tweet. Nobody knows who I am because of my husband, she says. People know my husband because of me.
Oof.
Now, that's on the record. When we get to talking about the tweets, this is what happens. Conversation between the reporter and Kellyanne. Reporter, you told me you found George's tweets, her husband's, disrespectful. Kellyanne responds, it is disrespectful. It's a violation of basic decency, certainly if not marital vows.
Oof. Wow.
Dot, dot, dot. As a person familiar with their relationship.
She's telling him that's how she wants to be quoted.
Right. She wants to be quoted.
She's a person familiar with the relationship.
Right. The reporter replies, no, we're on the record here. You can't say after the fact as someone familiar, Kellyanne. I told you everything about his tweets was off the record. The reporter says, no, that's not true. That never happened. Kellyanne says, well, people do see it this way. People do see it that way. I don't say I do, but people see it that way. Reporter replies, I'm saying we never discussed everything about his tweets being off the record. There are certain things you said that I put off the record. Kellyanne, fine. I never actually said what I think about it, and I won't say what I think about it.
She did actually say what she thinks about it.
And then she says, which tells you what I think about it.
Wow.
Which is, brutal back and forth, and a bunch of things to take out of it. I think you first have, like, you know, kind of that, you know, Real Housewives, like, drama of just two people.
I think if Tanya would do that to me, if I worked for the president, and, you know, we can have our point of view back and forth, blah, blah, blah. Honey, we are partners. We're in partners.
Yeah.
And you're my spouse, and right now I'm working for this guy.
And you're undermining me right
now. You're undermining. You're killing me. You're killing me.
Yeah, because, I mean, I have criticisms of Trump, and maybe some of them would be the same, I don't know, as her husband. But, like, I got to side with Kellyanne on this one. I mean, like, you can't have your husband.
Nope.
Your spouse is supposed to be the most important thing, and you're supposed to be a team.
Nope.
And it's one thing to express your opinion, but to do it publicly that undermines your wife's career... That's a tough one.
I think
one,
the
man.
Bigger point that we all can agree on is, you know, that's why the little ladies should be at home.
Really? We can agree on that? It's an interesting study, too, of, I think, something that's happening all over the country with people who disagree on Trump, who used to be friends, who used to be maybe spouses, who, you know, that are dealing with this sort of political disagreement. But one thing I want to point out on the media, which is fascinating, is what Pat noted, is she says it's disrespectful. It's a violation of basic decency, certainly, if not marital vows, as a person familiar with the relationship. So she's trying to get herself off record there. This is just some source saying these things. It's not really Kellyanne Conway. And this happens all the time. We beat up the media for really good reasons constantly. But we have to every once in a while remember that the Trump administration and the other side as well, Democrats do this all the time as well. They did it with Obama all the time. They go to the press and they say, here's something really crazy I want you to print. And you can only print it as a person familiar with the situation. So this is...
And oftentimes those people will come out and say, well, that's irresponsible. I don't know who said that. And I, you know, I don't know.
Right. Kellyanne Conway wanted this message sent to her husband. Right. Mm-hmm. And she did it. She said it. So the reporter sitting there, think of this, if she had successfully said, this is an off the record conversation, you can only quote me as a person familiar with the relationship. The reporter would have known it was true. Kellyanne was telling him it was true. However, they would have had to put it in the paper as a person familiar with the relationship. Then everyone, including probably Donald Trump, would have said it was fake news. And you can't use anonymous sources. Well, it's not an anonymous source to the reporter who's looking at Kellyanne Conway. Mm-hmm. It was a very, very on-the-record source to him. You just can't print that. So this is one situation where the reporter, you know, Kellyanne screwed up and didn't say it was off the record in advance. But when you see these reports, a lot of times you can dismiss them. And a lot of times they're not true. But they're almost always a message being sent by someone inside.
Now, let me tell you something I learned from Roger Ailes. I don't think we've ever told this story. We told it on the podcast last night.
Yeah, News and Why It Matters podcast, if you want to go back and listen.
I don't think we've ever told this story. Is at the height of the Van Jones thing, Roger Ailes said, got to back off Van Jones. And I'm like, no. and he said, no, I'm telling you, I said, Roger, we're right on Van Jones. He said, Glenn, I received a message from the White House. I said, what are you talking about? He said, they're going to replace Van Jones. He's going away. And I said, they called you and said that? And he said, no. It was in the Washington Post. I said, where in the Washington Post? He said, it was buried in the style section. And I said, that's in the style section? He said, that's where you send messages. Now, this according to Roger Ailes. I don't know if this is, I only have him, but he's a pretty good source. And he was in the Nixon White House, and apparently this is the way things work. When the White House needs to send a message to somebody, they'll approach the Washington Post, and the Washington Post does not want to be anybody's organ.
They don't even be propaganda source for a president.
Correct. So they will not accept things that are just planted. It's not, that's, we're a news organization. But the style section is not really news. And so if the White House wants to break some news, they propose a style section story. And that way it sends a message to those who are looking. In the Van Jones, I think it was Anita Dunn. It was something, it was some, you know, hey, look at my house. And in there, it was you know, Van Jones will shortly be moving on to do other things, blah, blah, blah. And he brought that and said, he's leaving. And within a couple of weeks, he was gone. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that is true, but it's interesting to me. At least at some point, the White House knew that the Washington Post was a section to where all of the big, big, big players knew, I can communicate and send you messages of where we're headed next. What does this story mean? I don't know, but it's interesting that this is making so much news and it's in the style section of the Washington Post.
Mm. It's a fascinating story. And there's with a lot of layers to it.
I think the most telling thing it means is that there's perhaps a little trouble in paradise for Kellyanne and her husband.
Yeah. I feel bad for Kellyanne.
I do too. It's
I really do. Yeah, I mean, I'm not.
That's a bad sign. Can you? I mean, I can't even imagine.
I mean, like Mary Matlin, who we love. She's married to James Carville, but
part of the relationship.
It's part of the relationship, right? They're two opposing political ideologies, and they both are in the public talking about it. It's been their job for a long time.
Yep.
You know, it just seems like a totally different thing because I believe it was Kellyanne's husband who initially introduced Trump.
And he was a Trump fan.
He was a Trump fan at one time. Mm-hmm.
And something soured him.
And something soured. It's like, that just seems like to do that, you're really, I don't know. I mean, you always have the right to have your opinion. You don't lose that going into a marriage. But to kind of try to attempt to sink your husband's or your wife's career.
Let me tell you this. And I think we can all relate to this. I think we've all had somebody like this. I have worked with and for people or had to have dinner with and with people and sat next to people and been kind to people that my wife and me too. Did not want to, my wife would like to unload on them. Let's just say that.
Okay.
And we will be driving to the place. I'll be like, please, honey, please. Somebody's got to say, I know, but it's not tonight. It's not now. Please. And she will do it because we're partners. I've done the same for her. I've been really mad at some people that, you know, she's wanted to be, and she'll say, don't. Okay. We're partners. That's the way a healthy marriage should be. This partnership is not a partnership. And
no.
I would say that if she were against Trump and he were for Trump.
And, you know, he knows what Trump is like. He knows how difficult that makes it for her in the White House. Can you imagine how pissed Trump is?
To me,
Kellyanne's wife is backstabbing him like this.
If
Kellyanne's husband, not Kellyanne's wife,
if they were having marital problems already, to me, if I were Kellyanne, I would be like, you are just out to destroy me. You are just trying to get leverage and destroy me in my career.
It'd be hard not to take it that way.
Yeah, really not cool.
Hey, Pat, on the fabulous episode of Pat Gray Unleashed coming up, you going to talk about the Masterpiece Cake Shop thing at all?
Yes. We talked about that the other day, too, but there's some interesting developments on that we're going to share coming up in a few minutes.
But what are they?
I'm not going to tell you.
I want to know what the interesting developments are.
You're going to have to listen to the show.
You're saying to me they're not that interesting?
You're going to have to listen to the show and find out.
It's just a cheap trick that works, unfortunately.
No, I got to know now.
I know. It's coming up with the Pat Gray radio program, coming up in just about 50 minutes on the Blaze Radio Network. All right. Simply Safe Home Security, great security system, fantastic protection. They're just the best at what they do. SimplySafeBeck.com. I want you to go there. I want you to look at their security system, and I want you to specifically scroll down, and you will see how much money you will save by buying your security through Simply Safe. This is a system that you will own. It's top-of-the-line security, top-of-the-line technology, way ahead of everybody else. They already protect over 2 million people. You own the system. There's no hard wiring to it. Round-the-clock professional monitoring and police dispatch is only $14.99 a month. When you see the price of the system that you will own, and then you couple it with the $14.99, and you realize, holy cow, I have been duped by a security company. When you see how much money you are going to save from, you know, not going, you know, through the other security, the wired security companies, you're going to see how they've been ripping you off because they could, because there was no, you know, everybody was playing the same game. Simply Safe actually built something out of necessity and it caught on. That's the way the free market system works. Simply Safe. Go to SimplySafeBeck.com. You'll save, I think it's 10% off of your system right now at SimplySafeBeck.com. That's SimplySafeBeck.com. Weed killing chemical linked to cancer found in some children's breakfast. We're going to get into that on Monday with Stu.
Stop it.
No. pediatrics, they were shocked by this.
I'm sure they were. I'm shocked by the new movement. You know, abolish ICE. They want to get rid of the whole border thing.
It's brand new. Wait, they're getting rid of it.
They want to.
Why?
Democratic socialists, they want to get rid of ICE.
Yeah, but they don't want to get rid of, you know, get rid of ICE or whatever their slogan was that was so catchy.
Abolish ICE.
Yeah. That was, you don't want to get rid of that because they've done abolish ICE now for weeks.
Yeah,
everybody knows it.
And they're ready to move on to the next thing.
Oh, are they?
Okay. The new idea from the Democratic Socialists and the far left.
Yes.
Abolish prisons. Abolish prisons is the new abolish ICE, according to Politico. The movement is to abolish prisons and, more broadly, the entire penal and policing system in America.
Wow, that sounds good.
Oh, this is a winning strategy for the left.
Oh, yeah.
Proponents envision a future society in which, rather than having better conditions in prisons like we have today...
Have worse conditions outside.
Yes, make the whole world into a giant prison yard.
Yeah.
They say that they are looking to create a world in which there literally exists no prisons at all.
Can't even
the Democratic Socialists agree that, like, a serial killer should not be left around children, per se?
Could I just say, serial killers, some cereals have the weed killing chemicals. Maybe those serial killers killed for a reason. Because it's in children's cereal. You'll hear about it on Monday.
Not even the same word.
It's bad.